Welcome to this podcast version of the longest-running soccer radio talk show in North America. Soccer is a Kick in the Grass. Heard exclusively right here on soccerisakickinthegrass.com. Your hosts, former Rochester Lancers trainer Joe Redcard Ziriotti and Andrew Battisti. Soccer is a Kick in the Grass podcasts are brought to you by the following sponsors: Salvatore's Pizza, JC Fibers of Rochester, and Top Notch Monogramming. Now here's Soccer is a Kick in the Grass.
Hello everyone, this is Andrew Battisti and welcome to soccerisakickinthegrass.com. Today we begin our special extended interview with the former owner of the Rochester Lancers, one of the most influential men in the history of U.S. soccer, Mr. Charlie Schiano. Over the next set of weeks, we're going to be reminiscing about the Rochester Lancers franchise, going back to the very beginning of the franchise in the 60s, and then through the 11 seasons the Lancers spent in the North American Soccer League. Charlie Schiano was there from the very beginning and all the way to the end of the franchise. He has many behind-the-scenes stories, things you've probably never heard before, about the North American Soccer League and the great time it was and how influential the North American Soccer League was to where soccer is today with MLS and the USL and our national team. On the first installment of the interview today, we're going to go back to the very beginnings, literally how the Lancers were founded and the years the Lancers spent in the American Soccer League, which eventually became and is the United Soccer Leagues that the Rhinos play in. Charlie begins the interview now by talking about how he became involved in soccer.
I came back to Rochester and I had been with the Public Service Commission in Albany after graduation from law school and after my military service. I came back in November of 63, if my recollection is correct. And during the year of 63-64, I joined the Italian American Sports Club. And while I was with the sports club, I had my opportunity really to view the first, what I considered semi-pro, amateur semi-pro games. And if my history is correct, that's the same year the sports club won the U.S. Amateur Open Cup Championship. So I came familiar and I went to some of the games at the old Edgerton Park. That's where the games were. I found them very exciting. That was my very first real exposure to soccer and the soccer games. And I got to enjoy it, and I started to follow the Italian-American soccer team as they played. And then there was just a kind of a hiatus. I was following the Italian-American Sports Club team because I belonged to the club. The club was then located on Emerson Street, corner of Michigan, I think. And we had several meetings, and then, of course, the World Cup was held in England in 66, and that seemed to excite a lot of people. And we were following the World Cup when West Germany played England for the first time in a meaningful match following World War II. And I saw the tape, and I was very impressed by it. And nothing happened. Then I was at a meeting at the Italian American Sports Club, and it was a Friday night. I wish I remember the date now. It was Friday night, and Rudy Lepore, of all people, said, "I got to talk to you." And we went into the broom closet at the Italian American Sports Club. This is the God's truth. And it was a big broom closet. It wasn't a small. It was a big one. And there were five or six people. There was Rudy and Tony Pilano and Pat Denofel, myself. I think Pat was there, too. And there may have been one or two others. And it was suggested that we form a soccer team, and the word had been out that there had been meetings before the United States Soccer Football Association, as it was then known, to create a national soccer league. And we understood that there were two groups vying for that position, and we understood that that was going on. There was a discussion, and we thought, gee, it'd kind of be nice, and so we got a group together. Now, initially, as I recall, we had membership in the group from the German community, had Harold Tausch, somebody from the Ukrainian committee from the group, and I think we had a couple of Polish guys, and people who were interested in soccer. We must have had 20 or 30 people. And we all invested initially $250. That was it. I'll recall this distinctly. We formed the corporation. And I think I was either secretary or treasurer, one of the two. And we decided to join someone, I think it was Rudy and Tony Pilato. Tony Pilato was definitely the first gathering in the broom closet. And we decided to apply for membership in the American Soccer League. Now at the time, the American Soccer League was the only, in quotes, professional soccer league in the United States. They had been sanctioned by the United States Soccer Federation. And the teams were all ethnically based. There were the Newark Ukrainian Sich, there was the Philadelphia Ukrainian Nationals, there was the Inter Club owned by Enzo Vignosi, who was just one wonderful, crazy guy. And he really wanted a team because he needed a presence in soccer so he could promote major matches between international teams, such as Inter Milan and teams from Argentina and Brazil. His father had played for Inter, and he had some connections in Italy that were very solid. He was always a great guy. I always call him the Italian Victor McLaughlin. Just a super guy. And then they had teams from New Jersey, Roma, I think that was New Jersey Romans or something. They had the Portuguese team from Boston, and all these different teams.
Now this is the league that eventually became the A League and then merged with the USL.
That's right.
The Lancers originally started in the same league as the Rhinos. This was before though that the leagues started, the two competing leagues, which was the USA, the United Soccer Association, which I believe that was the league that brought in full teams from Europe.
Correct.
And South America.
Right.
and rebranded them. So it was like the Cleveland Stokers was
right.
Stoke City, and Los Angeles Wolves was Wolverhampton.
Right.
So they brought the whole team in. And then there was the other league, whose name escapes
me. The National Professional Soccer League.
The NPSL. And they were more
interesting. They were, the Baltimore Bays were in. That's where Clive Toy started. He was the outlaw. That league, the NPSL, was considered an outlaw league. They were considered an outlaw league.
Really? So yeah. The U.S. Soccer Federation then preferred the bringing in of full teams from overseas.
Well, this is what happened, Andy. This is what happened. Was so fascinating. The USA was granted certification or the right to operate. They planned to start operation in 1968, all right? The NPSL did not have authorization from the United States Soccer Football Association, but on the other hand, what they did, Andrew, is they had a CBS contract. So the NPSL had the CBS contract, but they had to start play in 67. So they started league play. Now once the USA saw that they were starting play, the USA said, we can't let them get a year ahead of us, this outlaw league. So they went out and hired whole teams and brought them in to play in the Chicago Brubbing Cagliari. And I think Lamar Hunt, he was with the Sanction League. They brought in Dundee from Scotland. And
so it's almost like a
Boston brought the Irish team.
It was a super league before there was such a super league that we have today, or the Champions League.
Great analysis. That's what it was. And, you know, it kind of had a mess. Well, they started out with two distinct leagues. And in 68, those two leagues merged. They had 19 teams in 68. By 69, they were down to 5 teams.
And that's what they lost their CBS contract.
They lost the CBS contract, and they were down to 5 teams. We lost the Lancers in here, but that's okay.
That's okay. This is a good background, because I remember reading about the CBS actually tried to insert commercial breaks and stop the game.
Oh, great. So have you read Clive Toy's book?
Yes.
Well, then, you know, they tried. And, of course, you know,
It was ridiculous.
No way they were going to do that. And so that's the whole kit and caboodle in a nutshell very, very quickly. So we were then in the American Soccer League. I'll never forget, Peter Paris was one of the fellows who was a partner with us for at least a year. And we started out playing exhibition matches. That's what we did. Before we even got into league play, in 67, we started to play some exhibition matches. We played a team from Germany in the Division II. Had a nice crowd, and nice crowd. It was Sunday afternoon. Then we played Manchester United, Manchester City.
So Manchester United actually came to Rochester.
Oh, yeah. They played here.
How about that?
And Man City, when they did the double, Man City came here with Joe Mercer as the manager. And we had a wonderful time, spent a couple of days with Joe Mercer, who was a magnificent soccer guy, just a magnificent soccer guy, and a real gentleman. So, you know, we've had so many great opportunities to meet wonderful people in our venture in soccer. And so anyways, those games were played, and we did very well in attendance. And when Man U came, I think we did 11,000 people. We did 11,000.
Where was it? Was it at Edgerton Park? Or
no, we played at Aquinas Stadium. It was then Aquinas Stadium. And that was quite a night. And that was quite a, we got beat, I think, 7 or 8-1, but we scored one goal against them. But it was a good game. It was a lot of fun. All the famous players played. They brought them all.
Wow.
And it was great stuff. Great stuff. What we did on those games, we always tried to get the ethnic organizations behind us, and we'd have major parties afterwards. When we brought Dunfermline from Scotland here, you see a plaque up there on the wall, Dunfermline came in, and that was an exhibition match. I think we played them in 67. And we had a good game against them. They were Scottish champions that year. They toured the United States, and we had an opportunity to play them. So we played quite a few exhibition matches before we even got into the A-League schedule. And then we, you know, all these different people who started with us, it was everyone was trying to work together, but most of them dropped off by the way. You know, it became too time-consuming, too expensive in terms of the operation, so we lost a lot of people, and it ended up there was just a hard core of 5 or 6 of us who were left over the period of time to carry this out, and that's how it evolved initially, anyways.
So the Lancers started in the American Soccer League in
1967.
67.
Right. And we played for 3 years in the American Soccer League, 67, 68, and 69. In 68, I was elected president of the American Soccer League, and I immediately changed the schedule, because before they were playing fall, break over the Christmas holiday, January, and then trying to play again sometime in February or March. It was ridiculous. As far as Americans are concerned, we're not used to that break in schedule.
Right. That's what they do in Germany. They take a 6-week break during the winter.
And it was my judgment, we really could not compete effectively against NFL football. And it was silly. We're going to struggle to try and get TV and or radio time to try and compete with college football and college, better to compete with baseball. That was my judgment. And so I led the fight, changed schedule, so we'd play spring, summer, early fall. And we did. I think that was a wise choice for us and a good decision in the long run for soccer. Because before, all the amateur cups and everything else were held in this crazy schedule of especially in the northern conditions where we were, you really was silly to try and play that broken schedule. You just weren't going to get the fans there.
And the league was pretty much based in the Northeast. There wasn't any...
Yeah, it was all in the Northeast. Nothing, in fact, I think we were the furthest west there was. And it was interesting. I was told by Peter Paris, I'll never forget this, he told me in 67, because he went to the first meeting and said, I'm never going to go to another American Soccer League meeting. He said, when you go to the next meeting, Charlie, because you were our elected representative, go there, bring a bottle of aspirin with you and a cushion, because let me give you an example of what it was like. And I use some of these names, but the president's name was, Kurt Lamb. And the secretary's name was Alfonso something or other. Well, you know, it started out, the meeting, we wouldn't read the minutes or anything, it started out with, the secretary would get up and say, I want to introduce the president, Mr. Kurt Lamb, who played for the German-Hungarians for 10 years. Then he was transferred to the Albatross team, and then here. Bedford Day served as secretary and treasurer, has been a great, foul, loving man of soccer. Soccer is his life. Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary. Afonso, who played for the Hadassah, and after that played for this. Served as secretary treasurer, and they get their whole resumes. There's one. I'm sitting there with a fellow from Washington, who later became the Darts, but it was at Britannia. The name of the Washington team, and that was Washington Britannia. And we'd sit there, we'd look at one another going, what the hell is going on here? And then they'd start, and it was unbelievable. And I remember I had Norm Sutherland from Washington on my one side, who would later become the owner and manager of the Washington Darts, and I had Enzo Magnosi on the other side. And after the third or fourth meeting, we were scheduled to play Inter the following week. So I said to Enzo, where are we going? Where is your field here in New York City? He said, I haven't decided yet. I said, Enzo, we're planning on broadcasting the game. And Enzo said, why? I said, Enzo, because we want to promote the game. And the only way we think to effectively promote, one of the ways, is to do the radio broadcast on all our games. Why would you do that? Why would you spend the money? I said, because we want to promote the game and get everyone involved in supporting the team. Well, that's not a bad idea, Charlie. I said, yes. What do you need? I said, you need a telephone line, and I need an electrical connection. He said, don't worry, just bring a lot of wire with you. So we get down, and we're going to play the game at Eintracht Oval. And God only help me where that is. Now, this is 67, Andy. 67, Eintracht Oval. We get there, and it's nothing but a clay field, a little grass around the outskirts of the field. And we get there. And the team had to change into their kit. They had to put a ladder down a cellar where you open the trap doors in the middle of the sidewalk, put a ladder down, the ladder was underneath a saloon, and you climb down the ladder. You put the ladder, climb down the ladder, change, and I went down there with them because I didn't know what we were going to expect, change, then you climb up the ladder, you walk across the street into Eintracht Oval, right? Billy Gibbons, who was Bill Gibbons' son, who was then the news director at WHAM, the WHAM station. Billy Gibbons Jr. was our play-by-play guy, and I did the color. We broadcast the first Lancer away game underneath the grape arbor, and I tracked over.
Did you have wine afterwards?
It was unbelievable, just totally unbelievable. There were, 15, 20 people in attendance. And then the next away game was at Newark Ukrainian Sich. And I remember that Jerry McDonald and Jerry Flynn came with us because they were working with us on publicity.
Now, they were a pretty famous team at that time.
Yeah, they're great guys. And Billy couldn't make it, so John and I were doing the broadcast that day. And we walked in, and there were two guys, I thought they were from the KGB, taking tickets, right? And we walked in, they let the team walk in, they said, okay, $2. I said, I'm the owner, and we're broadcasting the game. They said, that's okay, $2 for you, $2 for the two broadcasters. I said, $2. So I paid the $6. Phantom Alpha comes in after me, he paid the $2. Are these people crazy? But that was the Newark Ukrainian Sich. And while we're at it, let me just jump ahead to 69. The opening game we're playing, the Boston Astros, but they had various different names. They're owned by this Greek guy named Bertos, John Bertos, who was just legendary. And you'll hear me mention Bertos many times. But Bertos, he had a great connection to South America. Rudy Laporte used to say, Charlie, I think he feeds him fish heads and rice and lets him work in his laundromat. But that's how he pays him. In any event, he always had a very talented Brazilian-type team. And we go up there, and we're playing this first year at Fall River. Fall River, okay, that's north of Boston. We're playing at Fall River. And we get to the stadium, I swear it was condemned. I really swear it was condemned. But what was fascinating is that I'm president of the league, nobody even acknowledges that or anything. It's had to be the 68s. And we walk in, and when the ball went out of bounds in either corner, the grass was like 6 feet high. I'm kid Andy, maybe 4 feet high, and we couldn't find the ball. It was 9 months the grass to find the ball. I mean, I should do a whole chapter on John Bertos, because the next year we're playing a game against his team, and now they moved from Fall River back into Boston. I don't think he ever paid the rent, and so he had to move from stadium to stadium. So he's playing in a stadium right next to the Charles River, right? Walk into the field, and there's two huge trucks on either side of the field, and all these freestanding lights, and the motors are running, the generators are running to run the lights.
Okay? The trucks are running the lights.
Trucks, the engine, the motors on the trucks are running the lights, and we're doing the game from the end zone, behind the goalpost, one side of the goalpost. And during the game, I thought my eyesight was going, because one whole half of the length of the field was dark, and one was lit because all the motor went off and the lights. So the players are running in and out of the shadows, and I'm going to Billy. I'm nudging him. I'm going to say, are your eyes okay? It's I thought he hit us, because we one whole half of the length of the field was in the dark for about 10 minutes until they got the lights going. But if this is hilarious or not.
This is incredible.
But Gibbons and I are going, I think the lights are out on one length of the field.
This is a far cry from what we have today with Major League Soccer and the North American Soccer League in the 70s. This is how it started. This is people played for the love of the game. It wasn't for money. It wasn't for fame. It was because they loved the sport.
Well, we're broadcasting the game, too. One more Bertos story, okay. Because this is absolutely fascinating. You may have heard me tell this story on the radio. But in between these times, we're flying into Boston to play the Boston Astros again with John Bertos and his team. And I wasn't certain where, but I guess the day before I found out we're playing a game in Chesterfield, which is a town, a suburb of Boston. Chesterfield, nice name. And we have a rule that if we fly in, we had a rule in the American Soccer League, the home team had to provide ground transportation. So we fly into Boston Airport, we land, there's no ground transportation, I have to rent 5 cars. And I am furious. I get to the field, and I'm literally screaming at John Bertos, who was kind of a friend of mine and helped elect me president. And I'm saying, John, the rules, I know, and I have the money. I said, but you're going to pay us for the 5 cars. And we're arguing. He's taking the tickets. John's taking the tickets. His wife is cooking the hot dogs, boiling them. Pat Denoffel's in-laws and his wife is Portuguese descent. Hit about 14 or 15 of them came to the game. He made them pay. He made Pat pay for all the relatives that came to watch the game. We beat them 3-1. The interesting story is the next week, they're playing the Washington Darts. And I had called Norm Sullivan. I said, Norm, you won't believe it. You're going to plan your own ground transportation. You're not taking a bus. I said, he takes the tickets. John Bertos takes the tickets. The next Monday, I get a call from Norm Sutherland because Washington played that Sunday. He goes, Charlie, you won't believe this. I said, what? He says, Bertos was short a player, so he played in goal. So I immediately called Rudy Laporte. I said, Rudy, you won't really have been on a trip with us. I said, Rudy, you won't believe this. I said, John Bertos played goal. And Rudy said, who took the tickets? It takes some time to get that story out, but that's the God's truth. And now where were we? We're still in the American Soccer.
Yeah,
we're
still
great stories.
It sure is. So this is before the first collapse of the North American Soccer. It became the North American Soccer League in 1968 when they merged the two
19 teams.
19 teams.
Yeah.
And then basically 14 of them went belly up.
Yeah.
So we're down to 5 teams, and the Lancers are playing in the American Soccer League, and you developed a rivalry with the Syracuse Stars. As a matter of fact...
Syracuse Scorpions,
right.
I have one of their pennants left.
And the Scorpions had a player who we all know and love, Mr. Frank Godoy, played for them at that time.
Yeah.
And the league, and the two teams ended up tied for first place. They had a one-game playoff to determine who
it was supposed to be a two-game playoff.
Really?
Yeah, but Sal called me, and he said, let's play one game at your place. And
Sal DeRosa.
And I knew he was having financial problems. I knew he didn't have a field to play on. So to accommodate him, we played a one-game playoff to qualify to see who would play the Washington Darts.
And unfortunately, Syracuse won that game.
They won that game, right.
And Jim Lefkos, who eventually became a member of the Lancers the following year when we won the NASL title, was the leading scorer, and he was the man for Syracuse who basically put the Lancers out of the American Soccer League.
Right, playoffs. He did. And we had a great year that year. We had a great year. We were 16 straight games without a loss up until then. No, we lost a game in August. But we lost a game to Washington. Before that, we had 10 wins and 6 ties, leading in from 68-69. We had a great record then.
It was a great team. And then we come to the probably most important story before the NASL came to town and how the Lancers actually became part of the NASL. We've said this on the show, that the Rochester Lancers saved the North American Soccer League. It would not have been a Pelé or a Canalia or a Beckenbauer or any of that, and probably not Major League Soccer, if the league had gone under, which it was going to do, except for Charlie.
What happened is that Washington and Rochester had a very close alliance, and they liked what I was doing. There's another great story about the American Soccer League. Remind me to get back to it, okay? But that's when they tried to prosecute me, but I'll get to that story later. But in any event, I got a call from Clive Toy. And Clive, I had tried, was then out of work because he had been working for the Baltimore Bays, who were in the initially Outlaw League. Then they were about to go under. They were dropping out of the picture in 69. They weren't going to play in 70. And there was a Baltimore Bays playing the American Soccer League. So it was kind of a confusing scenario. But Clive called me, and we had been friends. We had known one another from 68 on. And he said, would you like to meet with Lamar Hunt? He wants to talk to you about a business proposition. I said, it'd be a thrill, because Lamar Hunt was then putting together the American Football League, and they were negotiating with the NFL to join and play. And this was in 69. And so we had several meetings. Lamar flew up here. And they said, keep it quiet. But, it's hard to keep it quiet. I didn't tell anybody, but it leaked out Lamar was here. And then Lamar came up a second and third time. And he said, we'd like you to join the North American Soccer League. We're down to 4 teams, and if you don't join, we don't know what we're going to do. He said, we also know that whatever you do, Washington is giving you the power of attorney. And, in effect, they didn't do it. They said, Charlie, whatever you do, if you go, we go. If you stay, we stay. Whatever you do, we do. And they said, you have our authority to speak for us. So then it became, we negotiated back and forth, and Lamar invited us to the Super Bowl, and then we went to some games when the Atlanta Chiefs were playing. I'm sorry, the Kansas City Chiefs. Eventually, we got together at a meeting in Chicago with the then four owners of the and their managers.
Now, who are the teams that were in? Was it what, Kansas City Spurs,
the Atlanta Chiefs?
Was Dallas?
Lamar Hunt and the Dallas Tornado, and St. Louis Stars. St. Louis Stars. They were in. Now, then negotiations started, and they wanted us to pay an entry fee. And we're in this hotel, and you may have read in Clive's book. This is a true story. I don't know their end of it. I read about it, but Clive always teases me. We go in and we're negotiating, and it's Washington isn't there. It's just Pat and I, because we carry the they know if we come, Washington said, whatever Charlie decides is we'll do. Either we stay or we go. And we negotiated. And I felt it was time for us to move out of the American Soccer League, because we had really outgrown them. I mean, they were not broadcasting their games. They were not pushing soccer the way I wanted it pushed. They weren't working the youth program the way I wanted the youth program to work. And the guys in the North American Soccer League were more akin to what I wanted to do and what Pat wanted to do, because we had hired, people don't remember this, but Charlie Mitchell and Davey Thompson and our goalkeeper, Dick, we hired them full-time and sent them out to the schools just to give soccer courses.
This is our good friend and correspondent, Mr. Zero, Dick Howard.
They went out to all the schools, and they went to gym class. They taught soccer. That's all they did. And they wore the Lancer jerseys, but so what? But the idea was to teach the game, to get the kids involved in the game.
Because in the schools at that time, their soccer wasn't played.
No, and nobody knew how to play it. And these guys were pros, and they were good guys. And, Charlie and Davey were just very attractive guys with their little Scottish and British accents. and we were on, I think we were on the WSAY, and that was with all those crazy guys who later become major radio personalities, but they had to cut a commercial for us, and I guess it took Dick Howard one cut, and Charlie Mitchell and Davy Thompson with the Scottish took 30 cuts to it.
This is why Dick Howard is a broadcaster for the Canadian National
Team. Yeah, but he said it's so funny when Mitchell and the Thompson with their Scottish brogues. Where was I? In any event, the meeting progressed, and they got down to a $25,000 entry fee, and I said, no way. And then they got down to $5,000. I said, no way. I said, if you continue to do this, and Pat is kicking me under the table, I'm saying, there's no way. I said, either you let us in, walk in free, since we already paid an entry fee to the American Soccer League, and we're forfeiting that. I didn't mention to them, however, that we only paid $500. So anyway, we go out, and we said, you guys think about it. And the motel that we had these meetings at, right in the Chicago O'Hare Airport, and we're sitting on these benches waiting. And finally, I said to Pat, they want us. I said, I told them if they kept us up, they're going to pay us to come in the league. Let's go. So I'm pulling Pat, and Pat's pulling me back. We're kidding around. Little do we know that they're peeking through the curtains. See what we're doing through the drapes. And Clive tells a story, said, I told those jerks that if Charlie pulls Pat in the taxi, I'm throwing myself in front of the cab, and Lamar's going to reach in and drag both of those characters out. So reluctantly, after about 5 or 10 more minutes, they made us wait about 30 minutes, they pull and said, you're granted entry in the league without paying a franchise fee. So we walked in the league, and we had this great... we held off because I had to formally resign as president, and we went to a meeting in New York where I formally resigned, and then we had the news conference right from New York City that we were entering the league. And
you broadcast this back to Rochester from New York City?
New York City. The news conference was in New York City, yeah. That was, and that's when we first announced it.
Now, what was the reaction locally?
Oh, it was great stuff. That's the headlines. We had headlines. Lancers joined Major League. That was the cartoon that they ran. Rush and Lance is riding high, Major League Soccer.
Major League Soccer, it actually does. Charlie has a cartoon that says Major League Soccer.
But that's what
hold on to that. You know, never know down the road.
Well, it's fascinating, but that's how it all started. And that's the history of how we got into the league.
So the people in Rochester understood that, you know, the American Soccer League was a step below the North American Soccer League.
Oh, yes, they understood that.
So they were smart fans even back then.
Yeah. So that was that's out of the 1970 Democrat and Chronicle, and it was kind of thrilling for us, you know, and great times because it was an opportunity to really do a job. So we then embarked on, you know, finding a coach. But let me step back. It's 69. It's early 69, and I had ruled the American Soccer League with a real iron hand because there were too many times when teams wouldn't show up, when they would not put up a bond, when they failed to properly perform. There was all types of crap going on, and I ruled hard. I mean, I didn't let them cancel any games. I told them we're building the game from the ground up. You had to appear. You had to put a professional team on. And the Philadelphia Korean Nationals and even the New York Inter, my good friend Magnosi, they all, and a couple other guys, some New York Ukrainian Sitch, they all kind of ganged up on me and filed complaints to the United States Soccer Association saying that I was a tyrant, that I was ruining the game, that I would not allow teams to cancel games, and that I was being ruling as a dictator, et cetera, et cetera. And I felt I was the boss and we were going to run this professionally, and it weren't. So they brought in a vice president of the United States Soccer Football Association from California to have what they called a meeting to discuss these matters. And I felt that they had slandered me in this letter, the letters they wrote, and they had put me under the gun. So a meeting was held in New York City at the Hotel Penn, and they said, and I saw these guys come in, so I had hired a court reporter. I told him to bring his Bible with him. And we walked into this meeting, you know, they're all sitting around there, and my accusers are there. And I said, I want you to swear in all the witnesses. They said, well, no, this is not a trial. I said, no, I'm making a record. So when I sue every one of you son of a bitches for slander and libel, you got that? You got that? You got that? You'll know, no. Who said about suing? We don't say that. Look, you may not, but I'm going to. Because what you've done to me and put me through this, we can't conduct this. We're going to keep a record. So we're not going to have a meeting unless we keep a record. I said, unless we have a record, I don't want any of you keeping notes. I want these notes to be accurate. So for 2 or 3 hours, we just argued about whether or not we're going to have a court reporter. And none of my accusers would go on the record. No, I'm not going to. I said, hey, you guys accuse me of being a dictator. You accuse me of doing this. You accuse me of all these other things. Now we're going to have the hearing. I said, no, this is a meeting, not a hearing. We don't have hearings. Well, I consider it an inquisition. So we're gonna tape it or we're not going to have it. And so this went on. Finally, it was adjourned. Everything was quiet. And nobody did anything. But it was one of the great stories, Andy, because, and Pantanolfo, who I said, Pat, you got to come down and help defend me. Now you can take care of yourself, Joe. Don't worry about it. So I did, but it was them. Nobody messed with me after that.
I wonder if they threw a party when you resigned.
They may have.
But the ASL continued on, and in a small sense, the Flash came in the 80s, and then the league became the league the Rhinos are in right now. So
yep.
The league did survive. But they obviously were a second fiddle to the NASL.
Yeah, and it went through many permutations. And these permutations kept on changing. But everything was based on ethnics. And I said, you got to get this ethnic character out of here. It's not the Rochester Italians or the Rochester Germans. It's the Rochester Lancers. It's the Washington Darts, the Syracuse Scorpions. I mean, this game doesn't belong to one ethnic, and it's not an ethnic against an ethnic team. It's a locality, a geographic team against another geographic team. If you have ethnic flavors, fine, but it's not an ethnic entity. And I wanted to make that clear. And that's one of the things held soccer back, I think, in this country years ago in an amateur phrase. You know, everybody was proud of their heritage, but you didn't have to make it the Rochester Irish against the Syracuse Germans, that sort of thing.
Which is interesting because if you look up in Toronto, they really embraced that. You have in the Toronto Italian, the Toronto Portuguese, and the Toronto Metro Croatia. I mean, they it was a different aspect. But in this country, this is the way it went. It was, even though the NASL teams eventually did have a flavor to them, the types of players they signed, but they didn't promote it as the names of the franchises.
Right.
So, well, that's about an hour or so.
Yeah.
Say our next meeting or our next broadcast, we'll talk about the Lancers in the North American Soccer League and the championship team that from 1970, and then the 71 team that many people say was even better than the 70 team and played in the longest soccer matches ever held in this country.
Two longest soccer games ever held.
Professional games.
176 minutes, 148 minutes. Both against the Dallas Tornado, both in the semifinal championship round. Well, three anecdotes from the American Soccer League. It was 67, I think. 67, and George Baker, an Englishman, one of our investors who owned the company, and I had been acting as a coach. We had different I should do a whole chapter on coaches, but I had been acting as coach. He was our second or third coach, and he left in the middle of the season, and we were about to play. It was our first season, maybe 67. We were about to play the Boston Tigers. Boston Tigers were not yet owned by George Bertos, John Bertos, and they were owned by an attorney from Boston who was quite a character. And we had played our first game in the American Soccer League against the dreaded Boston Tigers, and they had a wonderful Mexican center forward, and I'll think of his name, I always forget it, but a great big guy who, I think it was part Aztec Indian, hair down to his waist, and it was a fantastic Division I Mexican center forward, and big, 6 foot, 180 pounds, and scored the whole four goals against us, beat us 4-0, and we were scheduled to play him. It was going to be the first night game ever held in Rochester, New York, a professional soccer game. We had installed telephone poles and put lights on top of the telephone poles. That was the first rudimentary lighting at Aquinas Stadium. We had six telephone poles, maybe four telephone poles with lights attached to them. And we're going to play the Boston Tigers. And I was asked to coach the team. I, who had never played soccer and had only a couple of years' knowledge of soccer, and didn't know what I was going to do playing the Boston Tigers, had about 3 weeks to get ready for them, 2 weeks maybe, I decided to use my basketball knowledge. And what we did is I knew we had to stop the center forward. I decided we're going to play a zone defense, and I put our left fullback on Mr. X. And I said, you know, the classic, wherever he goes, you go. If he goes to the John, you go with him. If he drops his shorts, you drop yours. Don't want you to play any offense at all. I want you to stay with him. Deny him the ball. Deny him the ball. Well, in the opening 30 seconds, Carlos Minitieri's brother goes in and scores a goal against us. And I hear everybody yelling, lawyer, go back to the courthouse in Italian. then we go crazy. We start scoring goals. But this center forward is totally out of the game. It's 3-1 at halftime. And we go in and we're excited. We're beating the hell out of him. And we kept up the same strategy. We just isolated him. Wouldn't let him touch a ball. And we're beating him 5-1. And I look to my right, and there is this center forward and my favorite left fullback fighting. And they're not throwing fists. They're jumping up and kicking at one another's head. Our center halfback, Dennis Jones, is already laying down because this center forward had cold-cocked him. And the way I set up the defense, wherever he went, there were two defenders. Because I had the zone, plus I had, what's the name, watching him. He didn't touch a ball all night. And, of course, both of those players were rejected, which made me happy. And my going 10 out of 10 as long as we went up winning the game 5-1. We killed him. We really killed him. Took him right out of the game. But it was a fascinating story. We're playing the Washington Darts in 69. I think it's 69. We flew down, and that's another chapter of the flight. We used the same plane the Americans use, a hockey team. It was an old DC-3 from World War II. The kind where the tail sits on the ground, you walk uphill to get to your seat. We fly into Washington, D.C. We're playing a game. And we are playing a magnificent game. They've got all the heavy studs. Now, this had to be 69. And they've got, all the great players they had that gave them a great winning season. And we come in, and we are knocking them dead. It was halftime. It's 3-0. And just as halftime comes about, a thunderstorm hits that area like you wouldn't believe. You couldn't see one goal from the other. Now, Billy Gibbons and I are doing the game on WSAY radio. And as we're doing the game, the referee calls a game just at halftime because of the rain and thunder and lightning. We're also doing the game from this high school field where Billy and I have to stand on these tables to do the game. Now, you know what your legs must feel like because we can't see over the balcony unless we stand on the tables. And we have to stand during the whole game with the papers in our hand. We're doing this game. As halftime ends, it goes another 5 or 10 minutes, the field clears, sun, bright sun. Now, unbeknownst to us, it's 7:30, and we figure we're told we're back on the air. However, we're not back on the air because WSAY had been committed to doing the Rosary Hour. So instead of picking us up, you get Father Cherenchoni doing, "In the name of the Father, and the Son, the Holy Ghost." So everybody's listening to the Rosary Hour. And we're still broadcasting. We're still broadcasting. During the interim, while we're broadcasting, Washington scores 3 goals. When Father Cherenchoni is finished with his half an hour program, there's about 10 minutes left in the game. They turn us back on. Meanwhile, people are calling the station, people are calling TV, people are calling the newspaper, all our listeners, because they don't know what's going on. Right. We come back on with about 7 or 8 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. We don't know because we think we're still live. We're still broadcasting. And it was 3-3, and of course people are going nuts and crazy because it ends up 3-3. And I soon get off the air, telephone calls start coming down to Washington. Where are you guys? Are you nuts? Blah, 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 this and that. And we didn't know that they did the Rosary Hour. We're broadcasting live with Father Cherenchoni. I don't know if it's as funny as it was for us, but the crazy part is we get back on the plane, and I check with the aviator, the pilot, and I said, you know, that was a hell of a rainstorm, a thunderstorm. Are we okay? No, no problem, no problem. Now, DC-3s don't fly high. They're supposed to be a very safe plane. They don't fly high. We had to fly back over the Catskills and the Appalachians there, and we run into the same thunder and lightning. This is the great trip everybody talks about. We're playing gin rummy, Tony Pilano, Pat Donofo, Rue Lepore, and I, and I'm sitting facing the pilot's cabin there. and the thunder and the lightning are going through the plane. The plane is going down, it's going up, it's weaving to the left, weaving to the right. Everybody is vomiting, afraid. Whoever had a rosary out. We thought we were all dead. And Rudy's looking at me. It's a white-knuckle flight like you won't believe. I mean, for a half an hour, 45 minutes, we are in total fear. We'll never make it out of this thing. I mean, we are diving, going up, going left, going right, on our tail, on the nose down. Then the door of the cabin flips open. It's an old plane. And there is the pilot and the Ukrainian co-pilot. I know it's a Ukrainian co-pilot because he's Alex Loy's friend. And they got a Rand McNally map, and they're looking for the roads with a flashlight, right? I figured we were absolutely dead then. Somehow we make it through the storm and we land. But it's part of the culture, and everyone will, to this day, will talk about the trip back from Washington. We tied them 3-3 there. And it was absolutely fantastic.
Well, thank goodness you guys made it back safely.
Oh, that was a great game. And we'll tell you about the North American Soccer League in our broadcast later, but exciting times. It was fantastic, Andy, to live through all those things we lived through.
Well, that's it for the first part of our interview with former Rochester Lancers owner Charlie Schiano. In our next installment, we'll talk about the initial years of the Rochester Lancers in the North American Soccer League, the NASL Championship team of 1970, the heartbreak that was 1971, and we'll also discuss the only two-time MVP in NASL history, Carlos Medinieri. Be sure to come back to SoccerIsAKickInTheGrass.com in about a week's time for part two of our interview with Charlie Schiano. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast version of Soccer is a Kick in the Grass. Soccer is a Kick in the Grass podcasts are brought to you by the following sponsors: Top Notch Monogramming, JC Fibers of Rochester, and Salvatore Pizza. Be sure to keep visiting soccerisakickinthegrass.com for future podcasts. And don't forget, soccer is a kick in the grass.